Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Excellencies, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Long Yong Tu, a few minutes ago in his keynote address, said that there is no use of WTO negotiations if it is not relevant to the business people. May I take this opportunity to expand on this point? A well-known reason for countries seeking membership of WTO is securing a permanent and unconditional MFN, the most favored nation status, and the legal protection against discriminatory protectionist measures. I'm going to stress today on the point that WTO membership lays the foundation for sustained policy reforms at home, which promote business competitiveness and thus are conducive to pursuing export-led growth strategy. Much has already been said about China. I'll therefore draw examples, in fact, from other recently acceded members, especially Vietnam and Cambodia. Now, countries acceding to WTO are required to put in place a set of norms and institutions which support liberalization of markets, increase transparency, and promote rule of law. In the backdrop, I think you have it on your seats, I've put a framework for mapping the trade policy and regulatory instruments relevant to each stage of the production supply chain. Now, most of these policy instruments are directly influenced or at least encouraged by the WTO accession process. Now, the framework is intended to enable stakeholders to take a holistic approach to national trade policy and regulatory reforms and objectively identify the implications for business enterprises. I would like to examine some of these areas in detail and evaluate how they enhance export competitiveness of firms. First, generalized reduction in tariffs and removal of non-tariff measures negotiated during the WTO accession process contributes to removing the anti-export bias. Export-oriented firms are thus able to access raw materials and other inputs at internationally competitive prices, which in turn make their exports more competitive. Cambodia's state trade policy review, held about 2 weeks ago, revealed that their exports have grown in absolute terms in the post-accession period, and there is also an evidence of product and market diversification of their exports. Similarly, Vietnam's exports have grown from about $40 billion in 2006 to $71 billion in 2010. Second, WTO accession can help to provide businesses with access to low-cost, high-quality infrastructure services, such as telecommunications, finance, transport, energy, distribution, etc. How? First, liberalization commitments taken in WTO accession process, and of course, complemented by pro-competition reforms in these sectors, go a long way in improving quality and cutting costs of these services to the businesses. These commitments and accompanying regulatory reforms also help in attracting foreign investments, which supplement the much-needed resources for development of infrastructure. Now, let me take an example from Vietnam. Vietnam took commitments in the maritime transport services. Vietnam has been able to attract foreign investment of the order of $200 million for a two-half container and deep water port in 2008, a joint venture of Maersk A/S, Saigon Port Company, and Vietnam National Shipping Lines. It has reportedly reduced congestion in Ho Chi Minh City's ports. Vietnam has already made considerable progress in the area of trade facilitation. As per the World Bank Doing Business report, per container cost for exporting from Vietnam has come down from $700 in 2007 to $580 in 2011. Now, the commitments undertaken to improve trade facilitation in the broader context further contribute to business competitiveness. Prior to their accession to WTO, again, Vietnam charged comparatively high fees for port services, but in response to recommendations made by some WTO members during the accession process, Vietnam reduced by 30% to 50% the maritime fees, maritime insurance fees, and other charges, and brought them to levels comparable to those applied in the ASEAN. Efficiency and cost of trade facilitation measures is one of the important considerations for multinationals when they make their efficiency-seeking investment decisions, which really enable countries to become part of the global supply chains. Now, the domestic reforms in all the above-mentioned areas and their enhanced predictability ensured by WTO commitments, coupled with better protection of intellectual property rights, often lead to flow of foreign direct investment. It is not sheer coincidence that inward foreign direct investment surged in both Cambodia and Vietnam from the years they acceded to WTO. In Cambodia, 2004, it surged from 130 million to 780 million in 2010. And Vietnam, which acceded in 2007, it surged at that point from 2.4 billion to 8 billion in 2010. Now, China, of course, is one of the providers of investment in both these countries. Both Vietnam and Cambodia are pursuing FDI-led export growth strategies. In Cambodia, as you know, garments and tourism are the sectors attracting FDI. Now, in the end, let me emphasize that participation in global supply chains has become very critical in era of production fragmentation if countries want to develop export-led growth strategies. The ability to participate in global supply chains is a direct result of the simultaneous reforms to investment and trade policies, something which is encouraged by WTO accession. Again, taking an example from Vietnam, it has been attracting investment predominantly in export-oriented manufacturing sector. Particularly noteworthy is the Intel's billion-dollar investment for a semiconductor packaging and testing facility. Now, Vietnam is emerging as a manufacturing base in Southeast Asia, and now the foreign-invested enterprises actually contribute around 60% of their export earnings. Now, all this, ladies and gentlemen, these facts and other things I've been saying to conclude that WTO accession can be a springboard for export-led growth if the WTO commitments are implemented and even complemented by suitable domestic policy reforms. Thank you.